Hare Krishna. So it's a great honor for me to speak from Srimad Bhagavatam in the holiest abode of Sri Vrindavan Dham in the association of so many wonderful devotees, and definitely I have no qualification for that. And this is why I wanted to ask all of your blessings, so that whatever I say would fulfill the criteria of the austerity of speech as given in the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Anudvega karam vakyam satyam priyam hitam chayat svajaya vyasanam chayva manmayata pauchate. That our speech should be satyam, truthful. At the same time, it should be priyam, pleasing. And I suppose, to the most part, it refers to jokes and fun added to the class. I'm sure I wouldn't be able to match the previous speakers with that. And hitam, most important, it should be beneficial for all, myself in the first place, and svadhyaya vyasanam, that it should be in line with version of Srila Prabhupada's books, authoritative. Hare Krishna. And before we'll speak on the verse, I wanted to ask your permission to say a few words about the complete picture which we are dealing with, because the verse we'll be reading is a detail and the complete picture is the context of the Bhagavatam, this particular chapter and this particular pastime. And I think it's important to us for us to understand how the detail fits into the complete picture. So first of all, we are studying the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is mathematically is the central canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the same way as the chapter 9 is the central chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And so this chapter is the most confidential knowledge, the most confidential chapter of Bhagavad Gita, dealing with the most confidential aspects of devotional service. And the two most important aspects of devotional service are glorifying the Supreme Lord, chanting his holy names, speaking about him, and the compassionate nature of bhakti. That is depicted in the text 14 of the 9th chapter, Satatam Kirtayantumam, and then text 30 and 31st, famous verses, Apichet Sudaracharo Bhajate Mam Ananya Bhag and Kshiprambhavati Dharmatma. And we can see that this canto 6, which is also the central canto in Srimad Bhagavatam, is very important, because right from the beginning it illustrates that statement of Bhagavad Gita, how powerful the chanting of the holy name is, by narrating the story of Ajamil, right from the very beginning of the chapter. And this particular pastime of Chitraketu / Vritrasura we are in the middle of. Actually, these chapters are kind of commentaries given by Shukadev Goswami, who was asked by Maharaj Parikshit, how come that this horrible demon who was killing all these demigods, he turned out to be such a great devotee. Normally, you know, we have this clear-cut division in our heads, right? In our brain, that if someone is a demon, that person's supposed to be demoniac, having nothing to do with bhakti. And if somebody is a devotee, he should develop devotional qualities. But here, in this particular pastime, which is very interesting pastime, we can see one of the greatest devotees, not just in a country or on the planet, but one of the greatest devotees on the universal scale, Lord Indra, specifically empowered by the Supreme Lord to represent him, he displays, we could say, very demoniac qualities. For example, killing a Brahmana and a Vaishnava later on, in case of Vritrasura. Could one be more, act in a more demoniac way than that? So we can see a celebrated devotee acting in a very demoniac way, and at the same time, a clear demon, Vritrasura, killing all the devotees, demigods, who are devotees. And then finally, it's described that he's actually a great devotee. So naturally, Shukadeva Goswami was a bit confused what's going on. And Maharaj Parikshit was a bit confused, so he wanted Shukadeva Goswami to give him explanations. And so this particular few particular chapters following the Vritrasura pastime are Shukadeva Goswami's explanation who is actually Vritrasura, that he was in fact a great devotee, Chitraketu, who received this demoniac form because of the offense he committed towards a great Vaishnava, Lord Shiva, and being cursed by his wife, who happened to be Maya Devi herself, Parvati. It's a pretty serious curse. And nevertheless, he is not disturbed by this curse, which shows his greatness. So this is the whole picture. And here we are going to hear from Lord Shiva himself, who glorifies Chitraketu as one who is uninfluenced, undisturbed by the influence of material energy. And naturally, this is something every practicing devotee is striving for. So we'll read this verse and the purport. So let's chant the invocational mantra. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Aviveka krita pumso, aviveka krita pumso, yartha bedaivatmani, yartha bedaivatmani, gunadosha vikalpascha, gunadosha vikalpascha. Bidevasrajivatkrita, aviveka krita pumso, yartha bedaivatmani, gunadosha vikalpascha, bidevasrajivatkrita. synonyms. Aviveka krita, done in ignorance, without mature consideration. Pumsa, of the living entity. He, indeed. Arthabeda, differentiation of value. Iba, like. Atmani, in himself. Guna dosha, of quality and fault. Vikalpaha, imagination. Cha, and. Brit, sorry, pit, difference. Eva, certainly. Sraji, in a garland. But, like. Kritaha, made. Translation prepared by His Divine Grace, by Charanaranda Bhaktivedanta Swami. Shala Prabhupada ki jaya. As one mistakenly considers a flower garland to be a snake or experiences happiness and distress in a dream, so, in a material world, by a lack of careful consideration, we differentiate between happiness and distress, considering one good and the other bad. Purport. The happiness and distress in the material world of duality are both mistaken ideas. In the Chaitanya-charitamrita, Antya 4.176, it is said, Dvaite badra bhadra gyan sabha manadharma ei bala ei manda ei sabha brahm. The distinctions between happiness and distress in the material world of duality are simply mental concoctions. For the so-called happiness and distress are actually one and the same. They are like the happiness and distress in dreams. A sleeping man creates his happiness and distress by dreaming, although actually they have no existence. So how do I understand this? That happiness and distress are the same? Well, there is a little joke, so you expected to laugh at the end. Not now. One man is saying, I am skydiving, this is good. But my parachute didn't open, this is bad. But I have emergency parachute, this is good. But it doesn't open either, this is bad. I'm still high in the sky, above the ground, this is good. But the ground approaches very swiftly. This is bad. But on the ground underneath of me, I see a stack of hay. This is good. But there are hay forks sticking out of it. This is bad. I never landed on the hay forks. This is good. But I missed the stack of hay also. So this is the kind of illustration of the material life. Good, bad, bang. At the end, it's all over. And what was good, what was bad, nobody knows. What was the value of it all? Because at the end, we are as good as dead. We're all part of the ultimate statistics. 10 out of 10 die. So from spiritual point of view, so-called good has no better value than so-called bad. So that's why it's considered to be illusion. and we'll continue reading the purport. The other example given in this verse is that a flower garland is originally very nice, but by mistake, for want of mature knowledge, one may consider it a snake. In this connection, there is a statement by Prabhanananda Sarasvati. Vishvam purna sukhayate. Everyone in this material world is distressed by miserable conditions. But Srila Prabhanananda Sarasvati says that this world is full of happiness. How is this possible? He answers, Yat karunya takataksha vibhavatam tam gauram evastumaham. A devotee accepts the distress of this material world as happiness only due to the causeless mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. By his personal behavior, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed that he was never distressed, but always happy in chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. One should follow in the footsteps of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and engage constantly in chanting the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. This is quoted in the purport, so that's why we chant it. Then he will never feel the distress of the world of duality. In any condition of life, one will be happy if he chants the holy name of the Lord. Why Srila Prabhupada's books are so powerful that they make, you know, so many people change their life completely? There is only one reason for that. Because Srila Prabhupada was the embodiment of what he is describing. He was embodying his own books. And he was the best example of that devotee who was never moved by so-called distress of this world. I mean, otherwise, after 70 years of age, having to undergo so many troubles, literally, life-threatening situations, being completely alone, you know, that would not be possible. But because he was so solidly situated in Krishna consciousness, he didn't care about all these things. And one example which stuck in my mind is very interesting. Most of you know very well how much struggle Srila Prabhupada underwent in trying to get the land for Bombay Temple, Juhu. And I heard from an eyewitness how Srila Prabhupada gave his very first class at the land after the victory. And one of the first things Srila Prabhupada said in the class, he said, just see how merciful Krishna is. He gave us such a nice piece of land without any struggle. And all the devotees were like, what are you talking about? But for Srila Prabhupada, it was not a struggle. It was fun. Like for a kshatriya, it's fun to fight. And so, actually, we can clearly see in his life that he had a tinge of that kshatriya spirit, spiritual warrior spirit. That's why he very early in his youth he joined Gandhi's movement to fight against the British rule. And you can regularly come across, you know, statements like Prabhupada was saying, I want to die like Arjuna on the battlefield of preaching Krishna consciousness. Things like that. So, and he was completely unmoved by the so-called problems of this world. And by his influence, he helped others to become transcendental as well. Like one very illustrative example how in the early days, His Grace Shyama Sundara Prabhu, who was very close to Srila Prabhupada, came to him in a very distressed condition, and he said, Srila Prabhupada, I'm in a big trouble. And Srila Prabhupada very compassionately asked, what's the matter? And Shyama Sundara Prabhu said, well, Srila Prabhupada, I'm such a fallen man. I'm very fallen. Actually, before coming to Krishna consciousness, I was not just taking drugs. I was actually selling drugs. And Srila Prabhupada looked at him with a surprise. He said, what's the problem? I was also selling drugs when I was young. Referring to his pharmaceutical business, of course. And Shyama Sundara Prabhu was a little bit bewildered by that statement. And he said, but Srila Prabhupada, you know, I was actually caught. And now I have to appear in front of the judge and they might put me in jail for a long time. And Srila Prabhupada said, no problem. Krishna was born in jail. So if they put you in jail, just chant Hare Krishna. So in this way he, you know, by projecting his Krishna consciousness upon Shyama Sundara Prabhu, he made him completely fearless, and then he went ahead and Krishna took care of him. He didn't have to face the consequences. As we know from the statement of Shastra, Yastvindra Gopat Havendra Ahosvakarma Bandha Anurupa Palabhajana Matanoti Karmani Nirdahati Kintu Chabhakti Bhajam Govinda Madhipurusham Tamaham Bhajami, that everyone in this material universe, starting from the Supreme Ruler, Lord Brahma, down to very insignificant microbe, Indra Gopa, they all have to face the consequences of their karma. But if someone worships Krishna with love, bhakti bhajam, karmanya nirdahati, then karma will have no effect on such a personality. And we can see these bright examples like King Chitraketu, Srila Prabhupada, how it works in real life situations. And so we'll finish up the purport. In dreams, we sometimes enjoy eating sweet rice and sometimes suffer as if one of our beloved family member had died. Because the same mind and body exist in the same material world of duality when we are awake. The so-called happiness and distress of this world are no better than the false, superficial happiness of dreams. The mind is the via medium of both dreams and wakefulness, and everything created by the mind in terms of sankalpa and vikalpa, acceptance and rejection, is called mano-dharma, or mental concoction. So again, Srila Prabhupada refers to that verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita he quoted right in the beginning of the purport. And it's quite interesting to see what was the context in which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that, made that statement. And if you look at this chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, you will find how Sanatana Goswami, who was sent by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu here in Vrindavan, and quite a few associates of Lord Chaitanya were already here, and then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami, you know, my devotees, they really live in a very poor conditions in Vrindavan. They just have one torn quilt and, you know, one pitcher for water, and that's it. So could you please go to Vrindavan and look after them properly? And so then Sanatana Goswami went to Vrindavan. It's not described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, but we know that he did what he was requested. He took care of the devotees. And then he went back to Jagannath Puri to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But on the way, he didn't have proper water for bathing and drinking, and he didn't have proper food. And as a result, he contracted very bad skin disease, skin infection, which resulted in sores covering his whole body. And these sores were emanating pus. And apparently his misery was so acute that Sanatana Goswami decided upon arriving to Jagannath Puri just see Lord Chaitanya and Jagannath, and then it was Ratha Yatra time, and then throw himself under the wheel of the cart to finish his life. But when he came and he stayed with Haridas Thakur, and Lord Chaitanya personally came to visit them, and on the very first visit, even though Sanatana Goswami was trying to stay away from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya personally came to him and embraced him against his wish. Even though Sanatana Goswami was saying, "Please, my lord, I'm contaminated, so please don't do that." And then little bit later on, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "I know your thoughts. I know that you want to commit suicide, but you have no right to do that because your body belongs to me. This is why no devotee can ever entertain such thoughts, because this is not our body. This body belongs to the Lord, so we have no right to do away with this body, because Lord is not sanctioning that." And so Lord Chaitanya said, "You should not be doing that. You know, if someone is misusing other person's property, that's a very wrong thing to do. So you should not entertain these thoughts of suicide, because I have a lot of important tasks for you to fulfill when you go back to Vrindavan." And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was astonished. He knew that, you know, nothing is hidden from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I mean, Sanatana Goswami was astonished. He realized that Lord Chaitanya knows everything. And Lord Chaitanya continued embracing him again and again and again. And Sanatana Goswami was suffering greatly because, you know, Lord Chaitanya's body kept, you know, was smeared every time with his pus. You can imagine. And then he spoke to Jagannanda Pandit, asking what I should do. You know, I cannot stay like that because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continues embracing me. And he forbade me to commit suicide, so it's kind of catch. I mean, and Jagannanda Pandit said, "Well, if he wants you to go to Vrindavan, you should go now, and in this way you will not be placed in prison." And so then Sanatana Goswami decided this is a good advice. And then he told that to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu scolded him. He said, "Who is this Jaga?" Referring to Jagannanda Pandit. "He's just a new boy, he's just a neophyte. And he dares to advise you, such an exalted devotee." And Sanatana Goswami said, "Now I realize that Jagannanda Pandit is more dear to you than me, because you're praising me and chastising me. You're praising him and chastising me." And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bowed his head. He said, "No, it's not because of that. I actually you are actually very dear to me. And I don't want you to go to Vrindavan now. You should stay for a year, and after a year you can go. But for now you should stay. But Sanatana Goswami said, how can I stay? I continue contaminating you again and again. And this is when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quoted this particular verse. He said, I am a sannyasi, and so for me to see everything in terms of duality is a wrong thing. And then he quoted scriptural references, Vidyavinaya Sampane, Pandita Samadarshana, that realized sage has to be equal to everybody. Jnana Vijnana Triptatma Akutasta Vijitendriya, one should be above duality, like that, which are very good verses. But then Haridas Thakur, who was there, they were together, staying together. Haridas Thakur said, these are interesting verses, but I don't believe that this is the reason why you're embracing Sanatana Goswami, because you're above duality. There is a deeper reason. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu smiled. He said, yes. Actually, the real reason behind is that both of you are like my children. And so will the parent mind being contaminated by a child? Parent will never mind. So for me, you're always pure, because you are as dear to me as my own child. So I don't care whether you're pure or impure. For me, it does not exist because of love. So bhakti is the ultimate reason for being above duality. And this is a very important point for us. And then he actually embraced Sanatana Goswami once again, and all his sores were instantly cured on the spot. So this was one miracle, Lord Chaitanya, out of so many, he demonstrated. And this is very important for us, because as Mahatma Prabhu was referring yesterday, because of this influence of duality, Ichhadesha Samutana Dvanda Mohena Bharata, it manifests in the first place in Ich and Vesha, desire and hatred. And what is the desire? Of course, desire for sense gratification, and hatred when there is lack of sense gratification. And there was plenty of pleasure in the spiritual world where we were with Krishna. But why did we come here? Not just for sense gratification. There is an ultimate desire of control, of position. And this is what people are fighting for. And unfortunately, I mean, the ultimate desire of the conditioned soul is to attain the ultimate position, right? And what is the ultimate position? To be God. So this is why we came to the material world. And so it's pretty congested in here, because there are so many gods fighting for superiority. Of course, gods starting with the small g. And this is the whole problem. And that's why Srila Prabhupada, I'm not sure if he put that in exactly the same way, but he expressed the idea very clearly, that there are two most important things in life to learn. That one, that God is there, Krishna is there. And second, which is even more important, that it's not you. He is not you. So, but when we come to Krishna consciousness, of course we accept the idea that God is there, but it's pretty hard to accept the second idea, that it's not me. Somehow, Even though we may say that, oh, I'm not God, but by our activity, we want to impress upon others that we are, right? And unfortunately, it's happening even in religious circles, big way, that some people are really easy to get along with once everyone learns to worship them, right? And otherwise, there are so many problems because of that claim, desire for position. And this is the whole dream of the material world. This is why this material world was created in the first place, that we try our best to act in such a position and see what will happen. And this is why Srila Prabhupada speaks so much in his books and classes against Mayavad philosophy. Sometimes it's really confusing, you know, like, is he really so much against the followers of Shankaracharya? Actually, if anyone read Prabhupada's books carefully, he will come to a conclusion that this is not the case, because Prabhupada calls scientists, modern scientists, Mayavadis. And in one purport, he calls Sahajas as Mayavadis. And Sahajas and Mayavadis are diametrically opposed in their philosophy, right? So what does Srila Prabhupada mean? And I've asked one devotee who is like arguably the best scholar in Prabhupada's books in the whole movement. And he said, of course not, Srila Prabhupada actually meant specific mentality people may have, and that mentality is Mayavad. And this mentality is actually what eroding our Krishna consciousness to the core. And the Srila Prabhupada explains in one class, he says, the difference between Mayavadis and devotees are very subtle. Mayavadi guru and devotee guru may explain the exactly same verse, Sarvadharmam parityajamam ekam sharanam braja. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. But the devotee will say, Krishna is asking us to surrender unto him, so I'm also asking all of you, let us all surrender unto Krishna. But a Mayavadi will say, because Krishna is asking to surrender unto him, and because I am Krishna, you should all surrender unto my lotus feet. That's Mayavad. Claiming an absolute and undisputed authority. And second feature of Mayavad is their famous statement, Brahma Satya Jagan Mitya. So only Brahman is true, only spirit is true, but this material world is false, and so has to be rejected. And so anyone who rejects so-called material things without understanding their connection, without understanding how to connect all this to devotional service, that's another feature of Mayavadi. But Prabhupada explains very clearly that even so-called material sciences or material arts, they should actually be all involved or connected to Krishna in devotional service, and this is bhakti. We know this very famous statement of Rupa Goswami, Yukta Vairagya. So So this is a devotional principle, and trying to reject things on the ground of being material, that's Mayavad. And unfortunately we have this very strong mentality, so-called radical approach in our society, when some devotees, they condemn certain things as being material, or certain categories of people as being material. This is not Vaishnava mood, this is not Prabhupada's mood. Prabhupada's mood was even more merciful than Lord Chaitanya. One time, one devotee was asking Srila Prabhupada that some of your leaders, sannyasis, they fell down, but you still accept them. But Lord Chaitanya rejected the fallen sannyasi. So why are you accepting fallen sannyasis? And Srila Prabhupada very humbly said, well, I cannot afford doing what Lord Chaitanya did. So I have to accept everyone, and I have to engage everyone in devotional service. So this is very important for all of us to understand that this movement is the movement of love, mercy, compassion. And anything which goes against this principle is, we can say goes against Srila Prabhupada's explicit desire, explicit statement. The very first statement of ISKCON, the very first purpose of ISKCON is to systematically propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large and teach all people the techniques of spiritual life in order to check the imbalance of values in life and achieve real unity and peace in the world. And so, of course, in the last 50 years, we may say we've achieved quite a bit, but what about achieving real unity and peace in the world? Or what about achieving real unity and peace? What to speak of spiritual people? What to speak of Vaishnavas? What to speak of Gaudiya Vaishnavas? At least real unity and peace amongst Prabhupada's followers? Have we done that? So, if we agree that we haven't, maybe we should do something about it. And that's why I really appreciate the services of devotees like Brahmatirtha Prabhu and Mahatma Prabhu, who are trying to facilitate peace and unity amongst devotees. And I'm aspiring to humbly follow in their footsteps. Hare Krishna. Thank you all very much. We still have 9 minutes, so if anyone has any comments, questions, suggestions, complaints, corrections, you're welcome. Brahmatirtha Prabhu, do we have a microphone? Oh yeah, thank you, Prabhu. Shankar Prabhu.
I like your points, especially on the interpretation of Prabhupada, that he didn't do as Lord Chaitanya did. So, and sometimes then we may have to not, and Prabhupada didn't exactly do everything Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati did, for example, 64 vows versus 16. So on one hand, Prabhupada's our founder Acharya, so we have to be very strict with the tradition. On the other hand, Prabhupada gave the instruction, time, place, and circumstance to adjust. So how do we achieve that balance?
Oh, thank you very much. I'm sure you know the answer to this question much better than me. But yes, the first and foremost instruction of Srila Prabhupada was to create, to his leaders, create unity in diversity. That was Srila Prabhupada's primary desire. And unfortunately, we see in past few decades that we are focusing more on diversity without considering unity. And so, as Prabhupada would say, it takes intelligence. And this is what this verse says, aviveka, because viveka in Sanskrit means discrimination. And so, we need to have this mature discrimination in the same way as Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada was very strict in his presenting the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but he was very lenient in its application. And so this is called maturity. And so we need to be very strict in never compromising the principles and the philosophy, but be very personal in application of the philosophy in terms of the individuals. But many times we just, trying to... Anyway, there is a joke, actually, to that extent. One man says, "We invented a shaving machine. You just put your head inside and it will shave you." But the other man says, "Well, how this is possible, because everybody's heads and faces are of different size and shapes." And the man says, "Well, it is only until the first shave." So I think this is what we are trying to do sometimes with our fellow devotees. And this is not a very good idea, that we just apply the principles and philosophy without any personal considerations. So, we are personalists, philosophically, so we need to become personalists in our application of it. Otherwise, we hear some very sad stories. One in Italy, one man who was a leader in one Buddhist group, he became interested in Prabhupada's books, and he joined the movement, and he became very, very serious practitioner. And all the devotees became very happy with that. But after some time, he said, "I think I should go back to the Buddhist ashram." And the devotees were asking, "Why?" And he said, "Well, in our Buddhist ashram, we have much better relationship amongst the monks than in here. And so, relationship factor is very important for spiritual practice. So I will be better off there than here." So this is very sad that we have the best philosophy in the world, but application of that philosophy is sometimes requiring some adjustments. But thank you for bringing up this point. All right, so 3 more minutes to go. A question? Okay. Should give priority to Prabhupada disciples. Yes.
Was it part of the verse, or was it part of the purport where we heard that happiness and distress are disappearing, or they're equal?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Is that in the verse?
Yeah. Actually, the purport says that for the devotee, happiness and distress do not exist, because for devotee, it's only happiness in the world. Like for materialistic person, whether it's good or bad, it's all bad. But for devotee, whether it's good or bad, it's all good. Because it's all Krishna's mercy. And I think, thank you for referring to that. I think this is very important. Mahatma Prabhu was mentioning yesterday that forgiveness is a very important part of our lives, that in this way we can overcome the duality. And this is very good. However, there is even higher level than forgiveness. That, for example, when we read Bhagavatam, Maharaj Parikshit, Prahlad Maharaj, Chitraketu Maharaj, when they were put in great difficulty, I mean, Maharaj Parikshit was cursed for a very minor offense, for a very minor mistake, he was cursed to die in a horrible way. And whenever read in Bhagavatam that Maharaj Parikshit says, oh, I am forgiving this foolish boy. Or we never read in Bhagavatam that Maharaj Prahlad says, I am forgiving my father. Or Maharaj Chitraketu doesn't say to Parvati, okay, you shoot from the hip, but I forgive you. No. Why? Because that level of Krishna consciousness does not even require forgiveness. Because Krishna consciousness means to realize that Krishna is always in control. Whatever happens in our lives, it's not even a blade of grass can move without the sanction of the Lord. And so fully Krishna conscious person will be happy with anything in life because it's all Krishna's mercy. And this is the level we should strive for. And I can share a little practice I'm following on my own, which really helps in any miserable condition you're in. And, you know, as long as we live in this material world, misery is guaranteed. How many of you would like to know how to change your mentality in a miserable situation? Okay. So, the process is very simple. Ask yourself, when you are in trouble, why it is good for me? How Krishna is showing his mercy towards me by putting me in this troublesome situation. And I can guarantee that you will find many, many benefits. And what is the topmost benefit from miserable situation? Ability to think of Krishna. How many of you found that it is true that in trouble, it's much easier for you to think of Krishna than in happiness? So that's why, you know, devotees have very strange mentality. For devotee, the worse is better. And the better is actually worse. So, but again, we should not apply it to others, right? We should only apply it to ourselves. That's also something which was mentioned yesterday. You know, like some people joke that it's, if you learn to see good in everything, it's easier to be evil, right? So we should not follow that system. You know, we should try to, you know, make others happy, but when misery is coming to us, we should take it as Krishna's mercy, but we should never cause any distress to others because it may backlash. I mean, you know, even though we are devotees, and of course, you know, the excuse is, oh, I am a devotee, so whatever I do, I'll never go to hell. Yes, it is true. Devotee will never go to hell, but we can see in the example of this particular story that a devotee without going to hell can be put in such a hellish condition in, you know, without going to hell, that the hell will look like a paradise in comparison. The hell may fade in comparison.
Thank you for that. I wanted to know also. also mentioned that Krishna says to Uddhava that when we leave our body, we lose everything that we so-called own, just as one loses the objects he possesses in a dream as soon as the dream is over. So I was thinking that this material life is like a dream. So whatever happiness or distress we experience in our life is finished as soon as the dream is over.
Yeah. Thank you. So we should wake up to the reality by chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. So thank you all very much, and sorry Panchagoda Prabhu for going 3 minutes over time. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granta Rajshimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Premanande.